Sharp Money moving along on deadline day. Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Meyer alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And folks, you've been hearing us talk about and promote the new college football betting guide ad nauseum. So why don't we welcome in the brains behind it? Let's hit the progressive guest line and get our VSiN managing editor in here. You might know him for his daily MLB winners, guaranteed winners every day. Adam Burke. Adam, how you doing, man? It's great to have you on.
All right, a couple things. First of all, definitely not guaranteed winners. It's been a really rough baseball season. So honestly, the college football guide has been a really, really nice distraction to get ready for that upcoming season. Should have a proof in my hands here in the not too distant future. So we'll be able to do our final editing process with that. But guys, before we jump into what we want to talk about today, I just want to send my condolences out to the family and friends of Dave Koken, a Vegas legend here in the sports betting industry, a guy who I had the privilege of meeting a few times, of doing some stuff with, at Wager Talk in the past. Very, very gracious towards me, very gracious with his time. A lot of respect for Dave Koken, and I wish him and his family all the best during this tough time.
An absolute legend, paved the way for a lot of people to do what we're doing today. I know a lot of people who listen to the show are used to seeing Scott Spreitzer join us on Wednesdays. Obviously, Scott and Dave go back a long time in this town, kind of setting the standard for how to do betting broadcasting, right, and cover it the way he did. And Dave Koken, right up until the end, still placing a lot of bets, living in this world, doing his thing, and will be sadly missed by all of us.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Sorry to interrupt, Joe, but, I reached out to a couple of his, a couple of the people over at Wager Talk, and, one of the big things I think that gave them, a bit of solace in this whole thing is that Dave very much went out on his terms. Yeah. He kind of decided how the end of his life was going to be. And as you mentioned, kind of betting right up until the end. So, a guy that definitely had a tremendous impact, as you mentioned, on the media side of sports betting and on a lot of people who, are in our network, our colleagues, all that kind of thing. So, once again, rest in peace, Dave.
Really, really well said there, Adam. Let's get into this college football betting guide that you've been working incredibly hard to have ready, I believe, later this week.
Thursday.
If we can get that out on Thursday.
Real quick, before we get into the details of it, Adam, it's a difficult task to get everyone here in line to submit their stuff. I need to know the progress report. How did we do as a staff? Was everyone on top of the deadlines? Did some people get things done early? Like, I need the assessment. Who was the last one you're waiting for to submit their picks?
Yeah, call them out if you're still waiting.
I'll tell you guys what, we have over 50 best bets from VSiN hosts and writers and contributors here in our upcoming college football guide that, as you mentioned, Dustin, comes out on Thursday. So, we got pretty much everybody. There were a few people that didn't fill out their spreadsheets. We, of course, had some people on vacations as well and stuff like that. So, it's been an interesting month. A lot of people with time off, of course, VSiN going back independent under Musburger Media, and we had some transition in terms of our emails and stuff like that. So, I appreciate everybody's patience with, all the emails that I had to send out, making sure that everybody knew where to put the stuff that they were contributing. But you know what? This guide really illustrates the great team that we have here at VSiN and why all of us, subscribers, potential subscribers, viewers, listeners, everybody involved, should be excited about the future here of what our co-owner Bill 80 called VSiN 3.0, because this guide showcases what we can do when all of us come together on a project. I think it's going to come in close to 200 pages. I haven't seen the proof yet, but when you preview 134 teams, that takes up a pretty big chunk. But you guys are going to be very, very excited to get this guide in your hands on Thursday, and I'm very excited to put it out.
Look, I'm pumped for it, not just because you asked us to write for it. That was also, I was trying to get you to say, Joe and Dustin, thank you so much for being on top of it and getting in way before the deadline. But really, Adam, they say in colleges that the arts and the athletics are the kind of the face of those colleges. That's how people learn what's in their backyard, what these universities are all about. And I think when it comes to VSiN, our betting guides are kind of showcase the best of us. They showcase what we do that makes us unique in the market. The NFL guide, which you had everyone put together a while ago now, that's been out there and available for download. And now this college guide, and let me tell you, breaking down the college world has gotten a lot tougher for all of us. So let's dive into some of the info. One piece of info I wanted to throw your way, because I am a Miami fan and I'm a little bit nervous, because when I looked, 8 people picked FSU, 3 people chose Clemson, but over Clemson, we have 5 experts on my Canes this year. Why should I be terrified when Mario Cristobal's in charge?
Yeah, and I think something that's important to point out real quick based on what you said there is, you know, we don't have to worry about keeping lines of communication open with coaches or SIDs for athletic departments, anything like that. You know, we're not going to blow smoke up anybody's backside here with these teams and our evaluations of them. You know, this is going to be unbiased, better focused content. So I think that's something that's a really big benefit of our guide compared to the other guides that are out there in the market. But look, I think a lot of it, Dustin, in the ACC just simply comes down to the fact that Dabo Swinney has this portal protest. You know, he refuses to bring in guys that could help his roster. And I think they have needs on the offensive line. I think that the brain drain of losing several coordinators, you know, at least you know, the two main coordinators for Dabo, has been a big deal. I mean, Wes Goodwin's defense was really good last year, but I'm not convinced that Cade Klubnik is a guy. I don't think that he's a dude. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, one of the upper echelon quarterbacks here in this conference for this season. And if he's not, I don't think that Clemson, you know, a team that seems to be going in reverse a little bit, is going to be better than the Florida States or the Miamis of the world. So I am one of those people that, you know, did take a look at Miami. I do like them quite a bit for this season. Bringing in Cam Ward and Damian Martinez starting the portal just shows the advantages that the portal can provide that Clemson isn't really reaping the benefits of. So, look, I think there's something to be said about believing in your program and using your NIL money to keep your guys around. At the same time, there's something to be said about getting really talented players into your program that are experienced and can help you out. Miami and, you know, some degree Florida State as well. Both of those teams did that. Clemson really did not.
Yeah, I love the Hurricanes this year only because, Adam, I'm a bit of a Cam Ward truther. I've been watching him since he was at Incarnate Word. And, you know, I said if he goes to Ohio State, he's winning the Heisman. He didn't. He went to Miami. I think being on the Hurricanes might hurt him a little bit in the Heisman market just because, you know, your team success matters there. And going 9-3, it's going to be hard to win the Heisman if they go 9-3, 10-2, don't win a conference championship versus an SEC or a Big Ten potential conference champion. But when we look at the ACC, obviously with the four power conferences, right, there's a tier one, the SEC and the Big Ten, and then there's the ACC and the Big 12 on that next tier below. I want to shift to the Big 12. I got my my Colorado coffee mug right here. Do we think the Buffs can go bowling this year? It looked like a pretty grueling schedule to me. They're over under set at 5.5. What do we think about Colorado this season?
Well, I think the tough thing about Colorado, Joe, is to some degree you have a stars and scrubs unit, right? Shedeur Sanders is elite. Travis Hunter is obviously an incredible player. And they have some other guys who are, you know, top tier talent. They're going to have a really big impact. At the same time, I mean, you know, Dion tried as hard as he could to go into the portal and get some offensive line help for this team. We'll see if that gels. We'll see if that all comes together. Personally, in my power rating projections, I have Colorado down for 5.38 wins. So I have them right now being more like a 5-7 team as opposed to a 6-6 team. I think a lot of it will simply come down to health, first of all, but then also the offensive line and those guys that they brought in. You know, are they going to be impactful enough to keep Shadur from running for his life on every single play? That's the big question in Boulder.
Yeah, and the Big 12 feels like the Wild West. I really feel like the Big 12 is so up for grabs. You could convince me four or five teams could win it. Just with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, it's wide open. I delayed this because I wanted to save it for last. You are an Ohio State fan. And when you look at our experts, so I would put our college football betting experts up against anyone in the country. You, Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds, like it's a different echelon when it comes to breaking down these teams. Well, the majority picked by this group of people to win the national championship was your Ohio State Buckeyes. Does that make you nervous?
Oh, well, no, not necessarily. Ohio State, not only the talent that they brought in, but also how you got so many guys to stick around in Columbus, how you got the Travion Hendersons to stick around, Emeka Egbuka, how you got a guy like Quinshon Judkins to come in when he knows that Travion Henderson is there. Ohio State really leveled up. They spent some money on players. They spent some money on transfers. And they also spent some money on upgrading their coordinator with Chip Kelly. And I think the biggest upgrade for Ohio State this season is not going to be anything from a player standpoint. I think it's going to be that Ryan Day is no longer calling plays and that Chip Kelly is on the offensive side. I don't like Day as a play caller. I don't like Day trying to be a play caller while also make good decisions on third and fourth down, stuff like that. I thought a lot of his third and short, fourth and short play calls last year were very unimaginative, very low percentage plays. I think Kelly is going to upgrade some of those things for Ohio State. I do think it's tricky. They got to go to Eugene October 12th. Hopefully that'll be a birthday present for me because my birthday is October 11th. Hopefully the Buckeyes will, you know, take care of business in that game. If they do, they win the Big Ten. If they don't, I think Oregon wins the Big Ten. But Ohio State, from a top-end talent standpoint, I mean, they're up there as, you know, number one or number two in the country. So it makes sense that people are high on them for this season.
Adam, in 15 seconds or less, are you buying Will Howard for the Heisman?
No. No, I think they're going to run the football a lot with Henderson and Judkins. That's going to take away from Howard.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's great analysis. This is a team that can certainly win a championship with Howard, but personally, I'm not buying the Will Howard Heisman hype. I don't think he'll put up the accolades and stats necessary for that. From the gridiron to the diamond, when we come back, Adam's staying with us. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into Sharp Money. Sharp Money moving along here on this Tuesday afternoon, deadline day, July 30th, with myself, Joe Cirillo, in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Swedelson. And we're starting to see that flurry of breaking news, a lot of deals coming in late in the final hour. Chafin, which is now official, DeYoung to Kansas City. Who better to talk to about it than David Sampson from CBS Sports HQ, MLB analyst, also spent, what, over two decades in front offices, David, in this league? How you doing, man? Great to have you on.
I'm doing great. Thank you. It's quite a fun day for fans, not so fun for front offices.
And we do have breaking news as we bring David on. It looks like, according to Jeff Passan, the Padres will be the destination for Tanner Scott. We've been wondering all afternoon long. And Tanner Scott, the hard-throwing lefty out of that bullpen, going to bolster that back end for San Diego. You obviously are familiar with Tanner Scott in Miami, David. Initial thoughts on that deal and him heading that way?
Well, if he works out for San Diego, that will be 1-0 them, because we made a trade at the deadline in 16 and got Fernando Rodney from them in a trade that did not work for us. So it's funny, when you have a hot bullpen arm, you want to acquire that bullpen arm and you just hope they stay hot post-trade. Rodney did not, and Tanner Scott has been outstanding this season. And the Padres, clearly, they've been all in for what seems like years, and it has not worked out. And their hope is, by bolstering the bullpen, which you have to do this time of year, that it can get them, at least past wild card and division series. They're not going to win the NL West.
Yeah, and it'll be intriguing to see what the return is there. Apparently, and I think that you had a tweet about this just a few minutes ago, the Marlins were seeking a ton for Scott. It'll be interesting to see what the Padres send over. Let's talk about the deal that is a done deal, though, and we know what the return was, sending Trevor Rogers to Baltimore for not just one prospect, but Connor Norby, the Orioles' fifth-ranked prospect, who's hitting about .280 in the bigs this season, and Kyle Stowers. I mean, it feels like a successful day for the Marlins. I thought they kind of fleeced Baltimore in this deal. What do you make of it?
Well, don't forget that Trevor Rogers has a couple years of control left. So he's a performing starter. And we were always very clear, and most front offices are, starting pitching matters. Pitching matters. And if you can turn a pitcher, your prospects, into a performing starting pitcher, you're generally going to win that trade. Rogers, his fastball velocity's down, but man, he posts every 5 days. And it turns out in our sport that not being injured turns out to be one of the great differentiators in the entire sport.
Yeah, David, in running one of these teams in today's baseball where pitchers can go down at any point in time, this trade deadline's moved up a month from when we were younger, right? And there's more time for someone to go down, and all of a sudden you have a piece to replace. And it seems like the market is asking for a lot in return of just a solid starting pitcher. If you were running one of these teams, would you be going after aces, or would you be going after organizational depth at this point?
You know, it's funny. You say that the deadline's moved up. It's always been the end of July. The big difference now is there's only one deadline. Yeah. There used to be at the end of August, you could secure trade waivers and make trades. But now playoff rosters have to be set with who you have at the, basically shortly at 6 o'clock Eastern time today on July 30th. And for me, go back to the Braves in 21. It's my favorite thing to talk about, when they brought in Soler and Rosario and Duval. No one had them on their list of winners for the trade deadline. Everyone thought it was meh. Guess what? they got rings on their fingers a few months later. So it's not always the aces that get the rings. It's really important depth pieces, and it's trades that we may not focus on that matter. Rodgers is a great example. He's not a game one starter that anybody would be afraid of, but man, he's a darn good game three starter and a game four starter. And getting that type of depth that's controllable and reasonably priced, that's what every team's hoping to do.
He's David Sampson joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Make sure you check out his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. David, what do you make when you see the prices that have been paid out for guys like Kikuchi and Rodgers and the current starting pitching market? What do you make of some of the bigger names? Jack Flaherty, Tarek Skubal, Garrett Crochet. Who do you think gets moved in the next 90 minutes? Who do you think stays pat?
Well, Flaherty, I think, will get moved. Crochet will not. I've been on an island. Everyone says he's going to get moved. When he came out and said he demands an extension, he won't pitch in October. He won't pitch out of the bullpen in October. If I'm the president of a team active right now, I'm looking at him and saying, who are you? Yes, you are a performing starting pitcher, but you don't want to get out of a 120 loss team. You don't want to compete. I wouldn't want that in my clubhouse at all. So I think it really hurt his value in the market. Obviously, we'll wait to see, but on today's Nothing Personal, there was an official wait to see that Crochet will not get traded. Flaherty's a guy, you know, if you look at last year's deadline and this year's deadline, a bunch of the same players are moving again this year. And it's all about teams trying to find that piece and having that piece matter. And there's so many teams in the race now that you're always just one hot streak away from being right there.
Well, one team who's trying to avoid that dilemma and plan for next year is the Tampa Bay Rays. Can you help us understand this? Because it feels like they said, no, two games over 500, 3.5 out of the wild card. We're going to instead work on saving money for next year and going for it. Like, how does baseball allow that to continue to go on when there's a chance to be competitive and they're saying these guys are going to make too much money next year? Let's reevaluate and change things up.
I think it's brilliant, actually, and I'm not talking as management of a low-revenue team. I'm telling you, the hardest thing to do as president of a team is to know when your window's open and know when your window's closed and not be delusional. So many owners are that as a president or a GM, you have to be real. The Tampa Bay Rays were not built. They were not going to go anywhere this year. And they just got a new ballpark approved. It's going to open in 28 if it's on time. The Rays are looking at their next window coinciding with the opening of their new ballpark. Because if you can win in a new ballpark in St. Petersburg, that's their only hope of turning around their attendance woes. So they did the very smart thing. And I actually respect what they're doing. Of course, now's the hard part. They got to get it right.
Fair response. Wow, I like that. I like that take.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, Dustin, you and I included, have kind of been, you know, bagging on the Rays for their approach to this deadline. It's interesting. What about the Rangers' approach? Because when I talked about Tampa Bay and when I criticized them earlier, I said they're two games over 500 and having a fire sale. The Rangers are three games under 500, David, and they seem to be buyers. They just got Chafin. They're rumored and linked to Michael Conforto right now. What do you think of what Bochy and the Rangers are doing as they start to seemingly get healthy out here?
Well, there's only one thing better than one World Series ring, and that's two. And I know because, man, we chased Amy every year after 2003 when we could, buying when maybe we shouldn't have, trying to hang on through tragedy and through lack of performance. So what the Rangers are doing makes sense to me. They're coming off a World Series victory. They're the reigning champions. They're within shouting distance. The Mariners were fledgling, but they've improved their offense. They've done pretty well this trade deadline, by the way. And the Astros had that tough start, but clearly they're, until you take it away from them, they are the dynasty. But the Rangers, why would you ever give up? You don't need to. You got to take that ring out for a ride, and I think that's what they're doing.
David, we've got about, you know, a little, an hour, 20 minutes till this trade deadline officially comes and goes. Who do you expect to get in some deals here in the final hour and 20 minutes?
It'll be interesting to see if the Red Sox can make another addition. I think that would be important because they've had a season that may be surprising to them, but they've got to wrap their arms around the fact that they're decent and they've got a chance to play in October, and you just never know. And when I think about that team, it being six over, you'd say to yourself, wow, you know, we're sort of maybe on the periphery, maybe we're playing better than we actually are. But this is the time of year when you have to not think about what you thought you'd be. You have to focus on actually what you are. And if you can do that properly, you can do well. So I think the Red Sox are going to do that. And then the Mets, look at them. They were dreadful. And now they're really making a ton of moves because Stephen Cohn promised us a World Series and time's running out for his promise. But that team turned it around, so you might as well try. And it doesn't matter how you get there. The Yankees start hot, get cold, you're going to add because you're in it. The Mariners, hot, 10-game lead, now cold, bring in some offense. You have to deal with today. It doesn't matter how you got to today.
David, I'm thrilled you tied the Mets in there. Here in the final 30 seconds or so, what do you make of the Blackburn deal? What does he bring to this rotation in Queens?
Again, could it be like a Michael Lorenzen traded and sort of had the no-hitter and everyone's excited he gets traded every deadline, so you just don't know. He's not a front-of-the-rotation guy, but as we talked about, it's so important to have depth. You wake up one day, Gerrit Cole says, I've got body fatigue. Ah, crikeys, we need someone to start. You're always waiting for the phone to ring from your training staff and doctors, and if by chance you've got depth who can step in, who can try to get you five, which is really what it's all about these days, shockingly so, that becomes a valuable addition. So is he the difference maker by himself? No. But as part of a bigger piece and a better team, he's sure as heck happy to be out of Sacramento and Oakland.
Yeah, I'd say. David, thank you so much. Incredible stuff. We appreciate the time.
Have a great day.
All right. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at David P. Sanders, president for the Miami Marlins. 15 years. Wow, Dustin. 15 years in that organization. That's impressive.
Great stuff. And I'm happy he pushed back on the Tampa thing. That was a great response by him.
That absolutely was. Three up, three down is next. Don't go anywhere on Sharp Money. Halfway through hour three, Sharp Money moves along on this deadline day, Tuesday, July 30th. No Patrick Maher today. I'm informed. Joe Cirillo here alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And we're going to head back to that progressive guest line with just about 30 minutes left in the show, just about 30 minutes left in Major League Baseball's trade deadline to welcome in my good buddy, former seven-year MLB catcher. Currently, you see him all over your TVs on MLB Network all the time. My guy, Anthony Recker. Rec, what's up? Oh, whoa, who put that picture of a Braves hat on there? That's unacceptable. Wow. Rec, you can't see this.
I mean, those were my best days, Joe. I had my best days with the Braves, so I think they're just trying to make me feel comfortable. I think that's
guys, he was a Met for 3 years. Come on, someone's got to get fired. There we go. There's you in the blue and orange gear. Rec, how you doing, baby? Let's talk about our Mets. What do you think of this Blackburn deal for the Mets rotation moving forward now?
Look, he's a guy that can definitely eat up innings. He can give you some good outings. He reminds me, not necessarily stuff-wise, but what you're going to get out of him reminds me of right-handed Manaea. I mean, he's basically a similar type pitcher. You're going to get some really good outings for him where he's going to go deep. He's going to eat up innings. Then you might get a couple blow-up type outings as well. But this is a guy who's, you know, he's got some chutzpah. He goes in there and he's got like an array of pitches, like 5-6 pitches that he throws. He manipulates the ball. He misses barrels, not a big strikeout guy. But he's the type of guy that can eat up innings for you. I think it runs parallel to everything I've seen the Mets do so far in this deadline period. And that's, you know, acquiring some arms, nothing flashy, and just see if the depth helps the team, you know, maybe get over a hump. I don't think it's the hump, but maybe a hump.
Anthony, take us inside the clubhouse here. You've lived through teams selling. You've lived through teams buying. You were there in 15 when the Mets made an acquisition, Michael Fulmer for Yoenis Cespedes. How palpable is the energy in that clubhouse when your team makes aggressive moves to go for it at the trade deadline?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, especially when you talk about that 15 team, we knew we had something. We knew we did. With that pitching staff that we had, we were like, man, if we could just score runs. I mean, everybody knew it. You know, the fans knew it. We knew it. Everybody knew it. And it just came down to, you know, our front office going out and finding the biggest bat on the market, which was Cespedes, you know, and bringing him in. It just gave us that feeling of, okay, this is the guy when the lights are on who's really going to shine the brightest. And it's, I mean, the whole clubhouse was buzzed. I mean, we were a buzz as soon as we found out that we were getting Cespy. I had played with him in Oakland, so I knew the type of player that he was and what he could do for us. So it was just really, it was a really exciting time. I mean, everybody is stoked. You could feel the energy, and it's, you know, it makes the dog days of summer. It gives you that extra burst to get the rest of the way, you know, through the season and into the playoffs with that, you know, extra bit of energy that you need to really, you know, go down a home stretch and play your best baseball.
Yeah, Rick, I was telling Dustin earlier, showing up to work at Citi Field that day of the deadline when the Cespedes news, I think it broke 5 minutes after the deadline ended. It was as close to a buzzer yep. beater as you could have gotten. And I think that the only time I felt more energy and more excitement in that ballpark outside of that weekend series against the Nationals was probably the postseason run that season. I mean, that weekend series against the Nationals when the Mets were like 500 in 2015 at the deadline, that was the closest thing I ever felt to what was recreated, of course, that October, you know, the Cubs games, the Royals games, all of that fun and craziness in the postseason. Shifting gears to a team that has really legitimate World Series sights right now, the Baltimore Orioles. They've made three deals. They got Sir Anthony Dominguez from Philly for Austin Hayes. They got Zach Eflin from Tampa Bay. And then earlier today, the most recent deal, getting Trevor Rogers from the Marlins, sending over Connor Norby and Kyle Stowers. I kind of thought Miami fleeced them in that deal. I also didn't love the Austin Hayes for Dominguez deal. What do you make of the Orioles deadline? We haven't seen in, you know, that sexy move I think everyone was expecting, a Crochet, a Scooble. Are you disappointed with the Orioles deadline, or do you like it?
I'm not going to say that I'm disappointed. I think Eflin is better than people give him credit for, and I think he gives them a more realistic shot to be an elite team. I'm not saying he's a number one or two, but he's acted like a two at times with the Braves, and I think he gives you that punch between Burns, and if they can get Grayson Rodriguez back and pitching the way that he did at the end of the year last year, I know that's a big if, and you don't want to have those, but at some point, you know, with the market the way it was, with the prices, what they were for some of these players, you know, you just kind of figure out where you stand. And for them, it was, okay, let's get some major league quality innings. Let's get a guy in Eflin in here who's got a great ground ball weight. We have great infield defense. We play phenomenally. We're an athletic team. Let's let him get those ground balls. Let's make the plays. And then, you know, we've got Burns to go out there and do the thing as the number one. Hopefully Rodriguez steps up. You get a little bit more out of some of the other guys in your staff. And now you bring in the Trevor Rogers, who can also give you some major league quality innings. He's flashed, obviously, as a rookie since then, been, I would say, a bit of a disappointment, certainly from a fan perspective, from what we've seen from him. But that said, there's still some ability there. So you kind of look at that and with, you know, kind of shoring up that bullpen a little bit. I know Sir Anthony Dominguez hasn't looked as good this year, but the stuff is still there. The numbers are still there. So I would say they did a nice job of rounding out their pitching staff. It's just going to be, can this team catch fire offensively and kind of club their way to where they want to get with the staff that they have? And they certainly have the capability because they have more firepower offensively in the minor leagues that we haven't even seen. And a guy named Kobe Mayo, I know we barely saw Jackson Holliday, but they've got the more and more coming. It's kind of crazy what they've built over there.
The Dodgers, Anthony, still the shortest shot on the board for World Series futures, plus 330 to win it all. They bring back Ahmed Rosario. They go and get Tommy Edman. Are those moves that can shut down these critics of this absolutely loaded special Dodger team? Because the only way to shut those critics up is to win the World Series in a non-pandemic year. Do you think it gets them that much closer?
I don't think their moves get them there. I think they added some depth and to fill some holes while they get healthy and while they get right. And I think, to me, that's all I've seen from them so far. I know they're still out there and they're still looking for some pieces. They're still looking for a big bullpen piece. They would love to add, you know, some more quality bats, but I think that's why they went the versatility route to take off some of the pressure from some of the guys that they already had on the roster that weren't really performing all that well, give them some major league at bats. And then from there, it's maybe they still need one starter, you know, based on the fact that they really don't have anybody who's healthy and dominant every outing outside of Tyler Glasnow, who still has shown, you know, some cracks in his armor, if you will, especially of late, because the guy hasn't thrown more than 120 innings in a season. And so They certainly still have their holes, but I think for them, it's just more about hoping that they get healthy and playing well at the right time, because they have enough pieces right now to win the World Series.
Former big league catcher, current MLB Network analyst Anthony Recker joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Rec, let's go cross town here. We talked a little bit about our Metsies earlier. Let's look at the Yankees. Gerrit Cole scratched today. They called it general body soreness. They're trying to now backpedal and say, don't worry, it's not the elbow, but nothing specific coming out of the Yankees camp. How desperate do you think, with Gerrit Cole, you know, and his health being a question mark, and their starting pitching as a whole regressing majorly over the last 4 to 6 weeks, how desperate do you think the Yanks will be here in the final 22 minutes?
I don't think that their focus is on starting pitching at this point. I think where they're at and what they've done, I think they still could use another bullpen piece or two. But from a starting rotation standpoint, you know, if they add an arm, I don't think it's going to be of the, you know, Garrett Crochet variety. I really don't think they're going to go out and add that kind of a huge piece. I think they would love to, but what it would cost them, I think they'll balk at the price. And because of that, I think they end up with a very similar looking starting rotation. Hopefully from their sake, an enhanced bullpen. But I like the move in going and getting Jazz Chisholm. I think they've added, you know, a lot of length to their lineup now, and you know, some versatility to move guys around. I think that really helps them. I thought that was a great move. Their offense is starting to wake up a little bit with Stanton coming back now. Chisholm there. Obviously, they've had a good last couple of days. I think they're in a place right now where they're comfortable kind of riding it out and seeing where it ends up.
Anthony, in about 30 seconds, Jack Flaherty is still on the Tigers with 20 minutes to go in the deadline. Who trades for him?
Oh, man. That's a guy that can help a lot of teams. If I was going to give one place, I would honestly say if the Dodgers can go out and get a starter, that might be the guy. Just because he's the type of guy that can go out and give you innings. He's, you know, obviously he's had some injury issues, but he's been going out and posting every, you know, 5 days for Detroit this year. And he can go out there and really be the type of guy that can bridge the gap between where they're at now and where they want to be when they get the rest of their team healthy.
Yeah, I love it. Robleski and River Ryan have given the Dodgers good stuff over the last, you know, 10 to 15 days. But I don't think the World Series favorites want those guys anchoring a postseason rotation, right?
I completely agree with you. And I think they're hoping to get healthy. What we saw from River Ryan the other night was fantastic. I think this kid has tremendous upside, but they certainly could use an arm, you know, to kind of back up Glasnow.
Great stuff. Thanks so much, man. Sharp Money rolls on. Don't go anywhere here on VSiN.